welcome to the Soccer Coaching Podcast, brought to you in association with our friends at Soccer Coach Weekly, reflecting our shared ambition to help coaches have the most effective, enjoyable and successful coaching journey for them and their players. We hope you enjoyed this episode and thanks for listening. Jason, my friend, welcome back to the podcast. How are you?
I'm good, Scott. Thanks.
It's great to see you, mate. I think it hasn't, last time we spoke, a couple of years since we spoke previously, and I think it was January we last spoke, so it's not been quite as long, but still long enough. What have you been up to? How are things?
Yeah, things are good. I over the last 6 months, I've made sure I spend more time, you know, with my family.
You've got a big family.
Yeah, coaching, you know, it takes time away from all of us, and I like now to just chill out and take myself away from it. And, you know, whether it's playing board games with the kids or doing something, I go to the gym every morning, so that's good. I started doing classes, which are great. I've never done a class in my life.
Well, like so, a spin class, things like that. Is that what this is?
They call it GTX. So it's like half cardio, half weights.
Right. Okay.
But it's been a game changer for me, and I do the cold plunge after. And that
it sounds that serious
cold,
now.
That cold plunge, if anybody's listening, is an absolute game changer to your body.
You're recommending it?
Oh, mate, I'm 55, you know, and I'm the fittest.
You look like you're 25. It must be working.
I'm the fittest I've been in 20 years.
Yeah, but it's good. But to be fair, like, I think it's important when you do coach that you have got, you know, not that you look a certain way, but certainly you're capable of being out there and having the energy and the drive, right? Because it's quite a tiring, vocation. It can take its toll. You've got to be physically fit. You're not running around a pitch. I know you're not playing anymore, but just being out and about on your feet and stuff and being around it and having the energy. So I can imagine it, you know, it helps with doing the job as such, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah. You know, Scott, when you're demoing and stuff,
yeah,
you know, it certainly helps, you know. I mean, kicking a ball is definitely the hardest it's ever been for me now at 55.
Don't get easy, does it? No.
I always find, you know, with your mindset, you can change it and do it. I mean, last week we had a club barbecue with FC Portland, you know, where we get all the families in and we give back and we get food carts out there and the food's free for the players. And then at the end of it, the players, the U19s, play against the coaches. And I jumped in and played. I've not played for 10 years. And some of the coaches are like, wow, you're pretty quick for 55.
It's like that, yeah.
So we went to France in the summer and that was good. Emily, I told you.
Is she still reffing?
Yeah, she did the Women's Euros in Switzerland.
Fantastic.
So we managed.
Is she enjoying it still?
Oh, she loves it.
Yeah.
Yeah, she loves it. She's got promoted to the championship now. So now she's doing the championship.
Very good.
So, yeah, she's doing great. Hopefully she can get the World Cup. I think the Women's World Cup's in Brazil, I think, the next one.
That would be perfect, wouldn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, that'll be
very
great.
Good. Well, you make a very valid point, even before we've got into the actual topic of the podcast, about the important thing about making sure that as coaches you balance your life stuff as well, right? Because if you don't do that, it does become all-encompassing, isn't it? Like coaching, you trying to switch off from it is really hard. So making time just to have a break, I guess, is really important. So, you know, and spending time with the family is important. So thank you for highlighting that. So I think we last spoke in episode 112, I think it was. But just for those that maybe haven't had the episode or haven't heard from you before, just a little bit about what you're currently doing, where you do it at, so people can get a gauge of where we're coming with this conversation, if that's okay.
Yeah. So I'm the director of coaching at FC Portland in the USA, in Oregon. Been there since 2019. I've been in the US since 2003. When I was in the UK, I spent 6 years coaching at Preston North End Academy and moved to the US in 2003. Still at 55, obsessed with football, soccer, obsessed with it. Still love it. It's the best job in the world, coaching, inspiring, you know, children to be the best they can be and try and encourage them to work together as a team. And if they get the sense of feeling that they're doing something that they couldn't believe they could do, then that's a great feeling for anybody.
Absolutely.
So yeah, so I've been doing that, and I coached it. I live in a town here called Beaverton, and I coached a high school boys team there. I've been doing it. This is my third year now, and yeah, just having a great time.
Love it. And you're still active on LinkedIn, where I see a lot of the things you put out there, which I think are brilliant. You always put out thought-provoking posts on there. Is that the intention with the stuff you put out there, just to get us thinking?
To get people thinking, and also we need change. I don't know what it's like in the UK, but sports here is for children. I think is damaging. It's a win at all costs culture. Parents seem to be more into it a lot of the times than the child, and it's damaging for them. So my posts, you know, they're not there to upset anybody. I don't really cut the only people I call out a US soccer, the federation, not in terms of people themselves, but we need a change, and I'm just going to keep doing it and doing it. And they say change is coming. You know, we had the DNA.
Yeah.
And then you had like the Southampton way, when Southampton were doing really well developing players. They've just come up with the US way. So we'll see. We'll see if change is going to happen, but it definitely has to happen.
Yeah. Well, if people aren't highlighting stuff and getting us thinking, then nothing changes it. So I think, you know, what you put out there, I always think it's constructive. I don't think it's ever... I always think it's constructive. You know, you're coming from a positive place, and it's just getting people to think differently. The win at all cost mentality in the States, then, is that across, you know, the whole sport, like from grassroots recreation up to kind of the elite end in youth football, or is it more targeted to the elite players or the stronger players, or is it just epidemic across the whole of playing? If I'm going to play for any team, you know, if under 13s, I'm still going to think it's a win at all cost kind of culture.
Yeah, I think the issue with any youth sport, when you start calling it elite, I think that's the start of the damaging part, because I don't think you're elite until you become a professional.
Elite under sixes over here.
I only class elite as a professional athlete.
Yeah.
So, we do talk about elite 10-year-olds here, and the win at all cost culture happens in everything. Yeah. You know, basketball, baseball, football, soccer, every single sport, the team has got to win. And a child's self-worth now in America, I don't know what it's like in the US, but their self-worth now is based on an outcome of a sport when you're 9 years old.
Yeah, it's crazy, isn't it? Yeah.
And we don't see that that is damaging to a child. We don't play sports anymore because it's fun. We play sports now to brag, or, you know, the parent puts them in sports to brag about it. And every child in the US thinks they're going to become a professional athlete.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, I've no problem with somebody having goals, but the adults, you know, especially the parents, they have to be the one guiding them and saying, well, that's great that you've got a goal, but let's just focus on getting on the high school team first.
Yeah. And also, you want it to be the kid's goal, not the adult's goal, not the parent's goal. Yeah. I think sometimes it's the parent's goal more than it is the child's. I mean, the child, obviously, what kid doesn't want to be a professional football player when they're 10 years old? But actually, if the parent wants it more than the kid does, then I think, you know, sometimes you get that situation as well. Okay, well, look, I think it feeds in nicely to what we're going to speak about, which is really around, and you're the great person, so I know how important it is to you and how much you try and embed this in what you do where you are. But we're going to look at like philosophy and culture, if that's okay, Jason. And what I want to do really first and foremost is kind of just almost distinguish the difference between the two, you know, and why they're important, and then we can get into more detail around okay what it looks like in practice. So I guess first of all, let's look at philosophy. What, in your opinion, what is a philosophy, and then how does that differentiate itself from a culture?
This is obviously my opinion, and I hope I can help people. I've always had tried to develop a philosophy, even from my younger days when I started coaching when I was 24. I always wanted some kind of roadmap for myself that's going to help me, you know, obviously teach properly and understand really what I want. So I've always, I started my coaching journey like that. Not, I'm not saying that I had the right philosophy, but the number one thing growing up for me is what I got taught and what I kind of have naturally is an empathy for people. So I care about people. When I played soccer, my mentality was always, well, what can I do for my team? You know, never about what can I do for myself. So I've been quite lucky in that way, Scott, where building a philosophy, I'm looking at it through a player's eyes. You know, because we all know when we've played and we play for coaches and you're like, I don't even know what this person wants from me. So I always try and look at it from through the player's eyes. And, you know, it, having a philosophy now determines what actions we do.
Yeah.
And, you know, how you want to play the game and what actions do we want from our players? So this is where the philosophy can help the players. And then once you have a philosophy, I think all the decisions you can make now are judged by your philosophy that you have, you know, and then, you know, can you implement your philosophy now on a practice field? You know, so whatever you're preaching, can you implement that now on a practice field? So where it's making sense to the players.
Yeah.
And we can't forget that every player obviously learns at a different rate. Every coach learns at a different rate. So I've certainly, over the last 10 years, become a lot more patient because then you realize, you know, we all learn differently and at different rates.
Yeah.
We're all different. Everybody, you know, every one of us is unique. I'm certainly a slow learner. So it's given me a ton of patience in terms of, right, I've got the people in place who I believe have good character. Now I've got to have the patience and help them, you know, help them develop. So, you know, similarly, like, you know, like you would with a player, I'd do the same with a coach. So then once you've got this philosophy in place, it's like, well, what are your principles of how you want to play? So now you start implementing those principles. And if you don't have a philosophy, I just think, especially in today's world, you're allowing people to complain and make excuses. And they've got every right to if you don't have a philosophy, I think. They've got every right to.
Absolutely. And I think, how much of that do you think the reason it's important to you is because that's the kind of play, that as a player, these things that you valued. So, you know, empathy, team first, kind of having a clear vision, that's something, you know, embedded with you. I think, do you think because that stuff you value as a player, that's why you value it now in the role you are at? Because you think, actually, you know what, like, I would struggle as a player to not have had those things. And when I did have those things, you know, I felt better for them and it helped me become a better player. And the counter side of that is, you think the players then that didn't have that approach or mindset, who go into coaching, do you think those type of players find it hard to embrace philosophy and stuff because actually they didn't recognize it's important at the time? They might be recognizing it now, but they didn't recognize it then. Because I'm just thinking, there's coaches out there like you that, which I love, and I think, and I'm exactly the same. I need to have that clear vision about where we're going first, otherwise, where am I heading to? I'm in the dark.
Yeah.
But you do meet coaches that are like, oh, Scott, I think that's great, but it's not for me. I can't do that. Like, I just need to get out. I just want to be on the grass. I just want to go and do the coaching. I just want to be there putting cones out and telling players where they've got to run around and stuff, and what, and telling them what to do. It's all about me in the nicest possible way. And I'm trying to work out why there's a difference between certain coaches like you and other coaches that don't embrace it as much. And is it that those fundamental things when we first started playing potentially?
No, that's the crazy part. How it's hard to make a culture shift. Because some people, you know, have empathy and a lot of people don't.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's like, I think I've said it before, probably on one of your podcasts, but it's like telling someone who has empathy to be mean and selfish, it would be hard for that person to do that. And then having someone who doesn't have empathy, who is mean, say, hey, why don't you be kind to people?
It's the same difference.
they're probably going to struggle. So
exactly,
I know I'm super lucky in how I was raised.
Yeah,
you know, my lifestyle growing up as a kid, you know, seeing, you know, my brother passed away when I was really young, and seeing my mum and dad struggle.
Yeah,
I do think a lot of it is built from that. Realizing how lucky I am, you know, and figuring things out myself and being resilient. You know, when my brother passed away, he passed away when I was 8, but my first 8 years of my life, that he was sick.
Yeah.
So that's all I saw, you know, and he slept in my bedroom. And a lot of the time, Scott, I had to turn the light on to see whether he was still alive or not. And
you
a lot of times,
yourself, aren't you?
Yeah. And I was, you know, and I'm 4 and 5 years old, and I had to go downstairs and tell my mum that, you know, he doesn't look good and he's in a coma, and they take him to hospital. And so those kind of things do shape you.
Of course they do. Yeah.
And I think it shaped me in a positive way. You know, it could go either way, couldn't it?
It absolutely can. Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think the good thing about this is then you think, well, our listeners, I know we've got great listeners, and I think for the most part, you know, they listen because they like this conversation that we have, and they, you know, they want to do things the right way. So I think we've got a lot of an empathetic kind of crowd out there. So I guess we can help me and our listeners kind of understand a bit more about how we embed some of this stuff, but also there'll be one people out there that listen that don't embrace it now and aren't there. We've got to try and convince them, right, and explain actually the benefits to it, because I've seen myself the benefits. So if we go through this now a little bit, we can talk about the culture side, then like how you've put this into practice in some ways, and then obviously what's the results from that, because none of this is BS, it's all legit. You wouldn't be saying it, there's nothing to sell here apart from just, you know, honest experience and the benefits it's had for you and your players, and hopefully people will be able to pick some of that up in their environments. What about culture then, Jason? How does culture differentiate from philosophy?
Well, I, you know, obviously I'm a kind of simple person, so I hope that everything I'm saying is not confusing, and I'm confident it won't be confusing, because I like to keep it simple.
Do it for me, please.
Yeah, no, I'd say like a philosophy is a principle, you know, the principles of how you play.
Yep.
And I would say a culture are the principles of how you behave, you know, how you treat each other, you know, how hard you work, you know, what are your shared values that you have? You know, there are a lot of values that you can have, you know, integrity, trust, love, competitiveness, and, you know, there are many more. But the culture is kind of like this loop where, you know, I believe people have to create the culture. And then the culture then can influence people. You know, your new people coming in, now they look at it and be like, oh, this is how they do it here. And they can get on board with that. But, you know, you've got to get the right people in who believe in what you're doing and who are willing to be open-minded and sit down and discuss problems and without arguing. And if they don't use your solution and use somebody else's and that works, don't get upset about it. If it doesn't work, we might come back to your solution. But, you know, like I say at the club, I'll give you my opinion, but if you don't use my opinion, I'm not going to get upset about it. The proof's right there in front of us, whether our solutions work or not.
Yeah.
But, you know,
just on that point,
Yeah.
You can even take that down, can't you? I mean, like, I know you're looking at it from a club perspective, and rightly so. But I'm thinking about, like, if I'm just, you know, an individual parent coach running a single team, if I want to create the right or a culture that I believe in, the people part of that will be the players and the parents, won't they? And you know, getting them aligned, because you see loads of problems in little teams of like 15 kids, like 12-year-olds, and it's all falling apart because actually you've got one parent and kid probably one direction, one kid in another direction, the coach going a different way. And actually, you know, if you haven't got that thing set out there, let alone at a club level where it's even more important, just at a team level, right, it can make a big difference to how that journey goes.
Yeah, and culture and philosophy are different because it's kind of very rare you tweak your culture, but you will tweak your philosophy. You'll not get your philosophy right. You'll not write everything down, what you stand for, what you want the players' actions to be. The game will just throw something at you where you're like, oh, we might have to change something here. And that's great. But I think over the years, I've seen the culture of, you know, being working together, you know, being a great teammate, having integrity. Those, I mean, those don't change. But I do think when people come into that culture, you know, like at high school now, you know, every year we get freshman players coming in, and the older players are showing these freshmen, hey, this is how we do it here. And they quickly get on board with that, even though it might be different from the club that they play at. They know that when they come to the high school program, this is how we're expected to behave. And it is massive. And, you know, over my 20 odd years of coaching, nearly 30 years of coaching, I've never seen it fail. You know, obviously I've failed at a lot of things, but in terms of gradually making a culture better, I've never had a problem with that.
Let's go back then just quickly and say, have you got experiences yourself, or have you seen where you've, you know, someone's got a philosophy and they've got a culture, but they're not aligned, you know? So then, you know, they may have a lovely philosophy, it looks great, you know, but actually the culture is very different. Is that something you've come across before? And if so, what are the problems with that?
I would say, I think it's really hard to see them not aligned. So I think they come hand in hand. So you've either got a culture and a philosophy, or you've got nothing.
But you haven't, yeah. And well, then I guess maybe you get a culture that you're not controlling, right? It's just one that's been organically happening because you're not controlling, you're not creating a culture. It's just something that's coming out organically from whatever happens to be around you, which might not always be the best one, what you want. Yeah, okay, that makes sense.
Because so I think they both go hand in hand, don't they? If you have a strong culture and strong values, I think as a person, as a leader, you're going to make sure you build a philosophy.
Yeah.
So they kind of come hand in hand, where you know, a culture that emphasizes consistency, you know, it kind of creates an identity of who you are and what you stand for. And then a philosophy, you know, it emphasizes questioning, you know, what you're doing, is it right? Because whether we like it or not, Scott, if you're selling a philosophy, you have to win. Because, you know, if you're selling a philosophy and you're getting hammered every week, then someone's going to question your philosophy. So it's kind of, you know, youth soccer should be about winning for the players. Absolutely. But it shouldn't be about winning for the adults, you know, whether you're a coach or a parent, you know. But then if you've got
maybe it's a question of how you win. You know, maybe it's like saying, okay, we want to win, but then what are our red lines? You know, our philosophy is we want to win, but we want to win this way. We're doing these kind of things. And, you know, it's subjective. I'm not saying there's one way that's right and another way that's wrong, but I guess as long as you're clear with it, then once you've defined your philosophy and how you're going to approach the objective you're trying to achieve, winning games, then it's like, okay, that then drives your culture, right? Because, right, if we're going to be that kind of team and play that way, then these are the values and stuff that are going to get us there.
Yeah, you know, parents can see, players can feel that they're getting better. You know, they may have been losing 6-0. Now it's going down to 2-1. The performances on the field look a lot better. It looks like we're getting somewhere. And that's what people can see. You know, I picked up a girls' team just over 12 months ago. You know, didn't speak to each other, couldn't win anything, played in like Division 2. You know, this year, September, we're going to be playing in the top division. And that's after, you know, 15 months. And these girls have been incredible.
And are you putting that down in part, at least to the fact then, well, what did you do to go from where they were to where they are now? It was part of that, the philosophy and the culture thing, and getting them feeling more like a family and united them that way. Was that a big part of it, or was it technical points?
Oh, yeah, because, you know, and this is where my philosophy, what I have, you know, the things I had in mind of teaching them on the field, that philosophy changed because I knew if I went in there with our principles of play with this particular group of players, they would shut down even more because it's too much. So I think I did mention on the last podcast, I started with that team and the principles were, we have fun, we run, and we compete. And that was it. Didn't go over any coaching points or anything. This is where we've got to go. And I think I told you some of the things I did with the poker chips and,
yeah.
And then I got a set of playing cards made. And when, you know, on five girls, I'd say, pick a card. And they pick a card and on it would say, be a great cheerleader. We want you to be a cheerleader for one teammate. And then those five cards we would read out to the group and say, right, which player do you think was the cheerleader? And they'll be like, oh, Scott, he was constantly saying to me, great job. And you're like, so I'd say, Scott, did you pull that card? And you're like, yeah. So just doing things like that with them. And it helps the mentality that, you know, they're not being judged. This is fun. And they're not getting judged on anything. We just, you know, I want you to have a mindset of I can and I will. That's what I used to say to them. I can and I will. I want that mindset. And it's been, you know, the proof is out there on the field, isn't it? It's the same group of girls and they're loving it. You know, they're having so much fun. And it's like, well.
And it's funny because you're not even spoken about, you know, like a game model or, you know, your session planning or, you know, getting them in for more hours. You know, it's about actually let's just get some basic stuff right and trying to get some bonding going and, you know, working together and, you know, that psychological side to the game, which I don't think people necessarily appreciate enough. We work so hard as coaches to try and get technical stuff in there and put on sessions and make sure the balls were on the right way. We forget about actually how the player's feeling, you know, not just with us, but with each other. You know, are they feeling loved? Are they going to work hard? And when you get to those tough games, you know, maybe you're getting a 1-0 win rather than, you know, it's a 0-0 draw. You're losing those games because actually you've got a bit more about you as a team, not because you've got necessarily even better technical players, just more of a team mentality.
Yeah, we played a tournament in June in Seattle. And our first game, we got beat 6-0. And I just said, hey, back to the hotel, time to play a fun game. And we just went back there and we played a fun game. I had all their initials in, and we put them in groups of four and all the initials in like a crossword thing. And they had to spell out the name. So now they're just playing it, totally forgetting about the result.
Yep.
And we're just playing a fun game. And it's like, well, that's how it's got to be for them.
Yeah. How do you balance so if I'm thinking about philosophy and culture here. How do you create a philosophy and a culture that supports both team and winning as well as individual development? If that makes sense. So I'm thinking like, cause, you know, because actually I'm trying to think of ways in which this could be conflicted. Like, oh, Scott, I don't actually really care about the team. I just want to get better as a player. And I might want to go and play at a higher level and move on. How do we keep Scott happy in a team environment, but with the same philosophy and culture? Is that, I mean, I'm sure it's possible, but is that something we have to contend and think about? Because, you know, it's not everyone's going to be put in the same direction all the time for everybody else. You might get a few characters that are there in it for themselves or vice versa.
Yeah. That's when the individual conversations start coming in, because everybody, you know, we are all different. You can't say this is how we do it and I'm going to treat everybody the same. I think your culture, you know, that pretty much is solid, isn't it? That's your solid foundation. Those are kind of your non-negotiables, aren't they? But now on your philosophy side, on the playing, you've got 16 players on your team. Every single one of them is different. Now you've got to look who's embracing the basics of your philosophy, but now who needs more guidance? And that might include, you know, an IDP, an individual development plan. I've just done an IDP for two of our high school players because they're going to be with me next year. At the moment, they're struggling. So it's like, right, I can't do all 20 players at once. Who are my priority players now to work on individually? Support. So I chose two players, and you know, some of it's silly, Scott. You know, the questions like, you know, do you make your bed? Do you help your mum with the groceries, your mum and dad, your parents? You know, do you clean your teeth morning and night? Just trying to find out, does this player follow tasks, and you know, one of them
well,
was
take responsibility, right? I think they're great questions. I think we could, maybe the most important questions, like, you know, how independent are they? Are they actually putting their way? Are they taking responsibility of their own, you know, life? You know, because actually, it's funny you said it. I might have said this before as well, but I remember going to, I think it was at Spurs. We went to watch, you know, they invite coaches on when they get inducted their under 10s, I think it was. And the guy at the front asked the players, he's like 9 year olds, kind of said, how many of you brought water? And they'll put their hands up. And he said, how many of you did it, filled your own water bottles up? And I think every hand went down, about two kids put a hands up. And he goes, well, I think the two best kids here are going to be you two because you do your own water bottles. And it's like, you know, that's, you know, who's looking after themselves. It was a message, obviously, it's about like taking responsibility for their own development. But if you're your own water bottle, mum, that's going to do that for you, then, you know, maybe you're not as focused. It was done in a fun way. It wasn't done in a negative way, but it was making the same point you're making about actually, do you know, some of the stuff that goes on outside of football is more important than the stuff that in the hour and a half we get with them on a Tuesday night or something, that's more indicative of where they are rather than what they do in front of us, right?
Yeah. And then so I helped, you know, and I just saw, even before I had given them the first weeks of tasks or what I wanted for them, like in week one, just by sitting with them, Scott, and saying, right, here's what we're going to do for you. I just saw a complete mindset change from a kid who didn't look happy coming to practice, and now he's kind of, oh, you know, and one of them played on Monday for me, scored two goals and played last night and was super effective in our 1-0 win.
Yeah.
And I'm like, that's just because, not that I'm a genius, that's just because I took time and I've got empathy to care for him. But his tasks for the week were, right, you make your bed in the morning and you send me a text every morning of your bed. So now and then one was arrive at practice before 30 minutes before and jog two laps, see if you convince a teammate to do it with you.
Brilliant. Love
and
it.
Then the next one was shake hands with all the coaching staff and five of your teammates. So he showed up on the, you know, our next practice not 30 minutes early.
Yeah.
He hadn't, you know, I gave him his IDP on Thursday. This was a Sunday evening practice. So I said to him, hey, what did you think about the weekly tasks I set you? So he said, I don't know. I haven't read them yet. So that's where the accountability part comes in now. I say, well, you've told me you want to get better. I've decided to invest in you. I've given you something on Thursday to read. It's now Sunday evening. Yeah. And you haven't read. That's great. You know, so it's kind of a little bit of tough love, but you're still there to support them.
Yeah.
And I said, look, bud, if you tell me you want to get better, you're kidding yourself. Because I don't believe that you do. If I'm giving you something and you don't read it.
Yeah.
So next practice he's there, you know, with his sneakers on, he's running around the track with a team. I know you probably think it's silly, but trust me, it's not silly.
I absolutely don't. I think that's such valuable learning. I mean, and the most important bit about that was the bit between the Thursday and the Sunday evening. That's where the learning's taken place, because actually that's the bit that's had the biggest impact. Him doing nothing for a day and a half or 2.5 days, you know, and then it was actually, do you know what? If I want to get better, I have to get myself better. People around to help me and support me, but it's on me. No one can give me what I need. I've got to just embrace what the good people have got around me to make it happen. All we can do, I think, as coaches, create an environment and a culture and opportunity to get better, but you can't give the kids it, can you? If we could, we'd be all millionaires, wouldn't we?
That's what's wrong with, well, it's not wrong, but that's how society has changed. You know, when we were kids, Scott, you know, we did it ourselves, didn't we?
Yeah.
We did it ourselves.
Yeah.
We knew there was no complaining because that wouldn't work with our parents.
No one's listening. Yeah. Yeah.
And nowadays, you know, how many times do kids come up to us and say, how can I get better? And they put it all on us.
Yeah.
That's why.
If it doesn't work, it's your fault.
That's why a philosophy is so important.
Yeah.
Where, you know, if that player's parents decide to come up to me, I can just say, well, hold on. Here's what I did. I handed him his IDP and he didn't read it for 3 days.
Yeah.
Come on. You're not telling me that's my fault.
Yeah.
That's why philosophy is so important, Scott, because like I said, you've got something to relate back to.
Do you think, Jason, that you should have your own coaching philosophy, as in, like, wherever I go, this is how I'm going to be as a coach? And then maybe you have like a team or club philosophy, you know, like in relation to where you're at. Or should it be one? I mean, I'm sure this should be aligned anyway. Or should it be just one thing that's right? That's it. I'm just thinking, actually, John, because I know what I'm like as a coach. I've never written it down, really. I think we've had to run a couple of courses before, but you just write down the words people want to hear, don't you? But, you know, I think, like you have, it comes down to some probably two or three words, really. Just what you really believe in. Do you know what I mean? And they're the most important things. And if you can't put it into two or three words, you probably don't know what you're doing just yet. You probably need to think about it a bit more. But I think, do you need a different one for you as the coach compared to you as the team or club, or should it just be one?
Well, I think it should be one if it has access to tweaking it. I don't think there should be. I don't think there should be non-negotiables on a philosophy. I do think there should be non-negotiables on a culture.
Yeah.
But a philosophy, if you're doing it as a club, it has got to be a little bit different than if you're just doing it if you're running 16 players. You know, because we're now, you know, we've got 35 coaches, multiple teams. So the philosophy that for the club, it's just like a guideline, Scott. But the principles,
that's like a framework.
Yeah, and the principles of play are just basic stuff.
Yeah,
you know, of what they are, and not, you know, a coach can't come in and say, "Well, I don't do it like that." You know, so if you're our attacking principles, the first principle of play for when we attack is we call it the three S's. So you spread out. You're separating from the opponent and you're scanning the field. Now, I mean, I don't think, how can a coach come in and say, "I disagree with that"?
That's not right. Yeah.
And you're like, well, these our principles are just the basics, you know? And then the next step for a player's thought process is, all right, so we've done the three S's. What's the next thing we're looking to do? And we say, have a connection with the ball carrier, support that ball carrier. So then a coach can't say, "Well, I don't believe in that."
And you're like,
these are kind of just basic, you know. And
the general principles are just a good tack in play, right? They're not defined by a formation or, you know, a playing style. They're just good practice to be able to progress the ball in the right ways.
I mean, I saw an IDP on LinkedIn, and it's like, of course, you want to take ideas from people. And if you do take ideas from people, I want to credit them. But then on the IDP, it was like, in zone 34, I'm 1.84 degree angle to support the ball. And you're like, stop.
Yeah.
That is absolute nonsense.
Yeah.
You can go too far, can't you? That is going, you know, and I think a lot of soccer is going like that. You know, it looks great on a PowerPoint, and it kind of makes you feel like you're a 5-year-old when you're looking at it. So you don't question it. You're like, oh, everybody else in the room gets it.
I'm the stupid one. Well, it's funny to say, because I think I've learned this more often than my UEFA B, is I definitely got a little bit more detail around the way we try and coach the players to play. I've got that detail. Don't get me wrong, I've got a long way to go, but I've got a bit more detail around it now. It's, you know, in my head. But the mistake I've realised I've made over the last 6 months or so is, I think, because I've got it in my head, I need to tell the players this now. So I need to tell the players everything. I need to make them understand and see it all. And actually, I don't. I think it's okay if you know the detail. If you've got your zone 37 and your 1.8 degrees, whatever it might be, that's fine if that's what you need. But the question is, how do you get it across to your players, the age and stage they're at, without them having to feel bogged down about overthinking about something, because they're enjoying the game, right? And that's, I mean, have as much detail as you need. If you've got it, fantastic. And I wish I had more detail in my head and could get more things across. But even if I did, what I'm learning now is, don't tell the players everything. Don't tell them what you know and what you want. Just find a clever way in which you can bring it out in the sessions so it doesn't become too cognitive. Do you know what I mean? And I think I've done with my players, I think I've made it too cognitive over the last few months. I haven't helped them. I think I've been too much, I need to tell you what I know and we'll work on this, thinking it's great. But actually, it has hasn't helped them at all. They need to not know that stuff. I need to know it and find a clever way in which we coach it.
Yeah, and that's good that you're seeing that. You know, I think when you don't see that, then, you know, there's a problem.
Yeah.
And this is why, you know, you've always got to be looking, and this is why I caught you, you know, this is why you'll never master coaching, Scott. You've always be looking of ways that are going to help.
Not just me, I hope you mean.
No, and looking.
You are right, though.
Looking through the eyes of the player.
Yeah.
You know, like I said, with the team that I have now, I started with no principles. Now, when I coach a session with them now, the highest amount I'll go is probably two.
Yeah.
That's it. You know, that's all they need. They need, here's the session. Here's what we're working on. Here's the moment of the game we're working on. This is the one principle I want you to think about all the time.
Yeah.
And that is it. Nothing else.
Yep. And practice that. Yeah.
I think it definitely helps with anxiety levels for the player. You know, you're not throwing defending principles in there, attacking principles, and coaching every moment in the game. That's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah, 100%. Well, you got clarity then, haven't you? You've got a focus. You can see if things are improving or not and what you need to work on. Yeah. So just thinking about examples then, I know you're passionate about this, and I know you do this, and I think it might be harder for you in some ways because you almost do it so naturally because it's just what you value. You said that at the beginning, and I get that. But I'm just, would you be able to, and you've said a few things already, so maybe it's just repeating those, I don't know. But how have you gone about, you know, embedding your culture where you are? Because there's a danger, isn't there, that coaches walk away and they write a philosophy out in words and they write a few key core values for a culture and they kind of just stay on a bit of paper somewhere or on a wall, or they're spoken about twice a year and everything else is left to organically happen. How do you proactively try and ensure that your philosophy stays true and your culture aligns to it? What things do you do there to kind of make that happen on a consistent basis?
Do you want me to talk about like both?
If you don't mind, that's okay. Yeah, where they line up and...
Yeah, the culture one is, that's the most important one to me, Scott. And I'm absolutely relentless at watching the players, how they behave. I'm, you know, at the club level, watching parents, how they behave. I'm just relentless at it. It was funny, you know, last night our captain got the group in and I give him the speech and said, right, good luck, get out there, have fun. And as I'm walking away, the captain got him in. He went, listen, coach is watching you all the time. He's like, do the right thing because he's watching you all the time. And I kind of chuckled to myself. And so it's just the culture part. I'm always, always watching on top of things. You know, simple things, Scott, when I say, right, let's collect the cones. Straight away, I'm like an eagle hovering over them, watching them all. Who's
doing it?
Who's picking it up? And the high school boys are relentless at it now, you know. And at end of every practice, you know, we get in a massive line across the stadium field and we jog and they're picking up trash and rocks, because rocks sometimes get on the turf field and you don't want anybody doing sliding tackles and having, you know, a pebble there or something that could slit your leg. So we jog as a group and they're picking stuff up and they jog back. And so it's just...
But how, I know people listen and be like, well, okay, that's great. How have you gotten there? I'm thinking, like, when I'm quite tough in my sessions at the end, but, you know, get the cones in, boys, in the right colour poles, please. And I look around and it's usually the same five or six kids doing that stuff and the same five or six kids getting their water bottles and something themselves out, you know. And I say it and I say, well done to Blards for doing that. Well done to you again. But I've not cracked the thing here. I've got them all doing it. I'm not being consistent enough with it or whatever else. How do you go about getting everyone doing it?
It's just being relentless.
Is it?
And then you've got the older, you know, obviously at high school and team is different because at your team, they're all the same age. At high school, you've got, you know, you've got freshmen, you've got sophomores, you've got juniors, you've got seniors.
Yeah.
So the seniors basically run the show and everybody else gets in line. So I don't even have to tell them after practice now. They get all the cones, they put all the stuff away, which is so much easier for the coach.
Yeah.
You know, you've got mini
No complaining, no money. Or did you have to go through a stage of kind of getting past the one and two? Because they're still kids, aren't they? One and two aren't going to be used to doing that kind of stuff. You just say no, that's how we do things here, and that's it.
I mean, it certainly would be harder if you weren't winning. It would, even
Yeah, that's a
though,
good point.
me personally, I would still be consistent with it. I wouldn't say, oh, only some of you do it now because we're losing. But winning, and then you've got, we practice with like the second team. So you've got the first and second team. Second team consists a lot of freshman players. They're hungry to get on that first team. So they fall in line with doing the right thing. And the team's, luckily, the team's winning.
Yeah, well, I'm not saying luck, but yeah, but maybe it's all part of it, right? Like you said, it's not luck. It's because you've got obviously got good players and good coaching, but if you only have that without the culture, maybe you don't win as much.
And then talking to the parents, you explain what you do. And I've been doing the high school for, this is my third year, and never received a single parent email yet complaining. And at the parent meeting, I let them know that, hey, just let you know, if you're thinking of complaining, you'll be the first one.
Love that.
And I'm going to print it out and put it on my office wall in a frame. So now they're like, if they're thinking of complaining, they know they're going to be the first one. And but you can have a little bit of fun with it too. At club level is a little bit different because we've got 600 kids in the club, and not every parent knows who we are or what we stand for, or sometimes, Scott, they don't care for
No.
what we stand for and who we are. They just want to see the kid win at the
Of
weekend.
course. Well, on that one, then, what do you do about that, Jason? When you've got a situation where you've got a player or a parent or someone that, isn't toeing the line with the philosophy and the culture, how do you manage that?
We try and help them. When I first started at FC Portland, this is one of the things I had to change in the culture. When I first started coaching at FC Portland in 2008, one of the first things I was told was, we don't talk to parents. Now, as a club, I get it if you're in academy. At Preston, when I was at Preston, we didn't have much interaction with the parents. I still think you should, because that parent is part of the development process of the child. So, when I went into FC Portland, that was one of the things that I changed, that my office is open to any of you. So we try and talk to them, and because there's going to be some stage, Scott, where you need their help, whether it's getting their kid back on board or what. We're having an auction in November. We're raising funds. We're trying to get a new home, so we're raising funds. I remember back in 2008 when we had an auction, and the philosophy was, don't speak to parents. Two weeks before the auction, the club's like, we haven't sold any tickets. It's like, yeah, no kidding.
Speak to anybody.
I know what I'd say if I was a parent of this club. You never speak to me all year, but now you want $150 for a ticket for an auction. So that's important. But we try and get them in. We've had parents in the office where we talk about it, and we try and find out as well, what are their feelings that the child is on a B team? And if they're saying they're struggling too, we try and say, well, why? Why are you struggling? If you want your child to be successful, hovering over them and solving all the problems that they're facing. And you said this last time we were on the podcast, didn't you? If you want to get to a pro and you're hovering over them, they're not going to reach the goals. Even if they've got the talent, they're not going to reach their goals because you're preventing them from dealing with some adversity and solving problems.
Absolutely.
And yeah, I remember you mentioned that in the last one.
It's not the way to help them get they want to get to it. We're doing things for them. They got to, you've got to be around it, haven't you? But if you're bashing down the path for them, that's the worst thing you can do. They've got to want it themselves and make it happen.
And we know what kids are like too. If they're upset and complaining, then that complaint is justified if mum and dad are doing it. Now they're like, oh, I'm right. Well, mum and dad should be like, hey, cut that out, change your mindset. What are you going to do about it? yeah, you've been moved to the second team, or yeah, your team has just lost. What are you going to do about it? Because I've never seen anybody reach their goals by complaining and moaning about it. I don't think that's ever happened.
Well, not it can have a short-term impact, can't it, sometimes, but it doesn't make any long-term difference. And you know, you can whinge your way so far, but it doesn't tend to make a difference to the end outcome if you don't find the right answers to the problems you've got to deal with. Yeah. What about onboarding, Jason? Do you have a process for onboarding parents and players there to help them understand the culture and philosophy from day one?
Well, we have an academy meeting at the start of the year. So myself and our general manager, Louis, he's a great guy. You know, we stand up and we tell them what we're about. We talk about the culture. We talk about the philosophy that we have. You know, this is how we do things here. We talk about long-term development, because that never gets spoken about in youth sports, which is kind of crazy, because you think how many of us are late developers. It's probably 99% of us we all develop in later life. You know, even now at 55, I'm developing better as a dad, as a coach, as a person. And we try and do it that way. And, you know, we have a PDF file of, you know, for coaches, they get the philosophy, you know, they get the hard copy. The parents get, this is how we do it at the club. The parents get emailed that. And the players at under 13 and above, they get our philosophy. They get our game model. We don't want to give it to a 9-year-old. We just think that's just too much for them. So when you're 13, you know, and we've got the platform and to email everybody in the club, which is great. So if I want to send something out club wide, you know, you click one button and you send your email. It's great. So everybody receives it. So now everybody receives it. Now it's up to the coaches now to implement it at whatever level they think. So when I always told the parents as well, I can make having a philosophy can make the car ride home so easy for you. Because if I'm coaching your child, the question you have to ask them in the car is, what principles did Jason work on?
Yep.
And if they say, I don't know, well, that's
something's gone
you've
wrong.
Not been listening, because he's probably only given you one.
Yeah. Shouldn't be that hard to know. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So then if the child gives the parent that one, then the parent can say, how did that look? What was that about? Yeah. How did you do? So it helps both of them to bond, instead of like, how was practice? No, it was all right. How did you do? Oh, I did all right. Well,
or the parent coming at it from one angle because they think that's important to them, but not realizing actually what's important to you or the coach that we're coaching the kid. At least you're having the same conversation, right? Because now it's a joined up kind of approach to development, rather than, oh, dad or mum thinks you should have shot more or done this more because that's what they think. But actually, no, we were working on combining together or something, you know, it makes sense.
And it's kind of like, you know, you're kind of like shouting it from the rooftops. Here's what we do. Here's how we do it. And then you've just got to sit back and be patient, Scott. You know, I think, what was it, 2019? So this is like my sixth year. And you can definitely see a change from 2019 to now. You know, we had my first coaches meeting. I had 7 coaches show up out of 35. You know, but a lot of them, majority of them thought it's not important to go and meet. You know, not. I certainly don't like saying your boss.
Yeah, but that's the reality, right?
Meeting someone who's kind of head of the football club, and wouldn't you want to go and see what they have to say? So when we started off with 7 coaches, now I'm thinking, well, the culture here is rotten, and that's what I've got to start on first before I even touch a philosophy.
Well, that was my next question around the coaches, because obviously you've worked hard to get a team together that, you know, buy into what, you know, the philosophy and the culture of what you're doing. How much of that is a focus at recruitment. I mean, you know, when you're bringing on new coaches into the family that you've got there, how much emphasis is to make sure they're the right fit because of that? And how do you go about that? Is it just observing them or asking questions to make sure that actually you're getting a good one in there that's going to keep, you know, because like it could fall apart, couldn't it? If you've got the wrong person on the grass with the kids, it could fall apart quite quick.
I think, you know, when I was talking about, I'm lucky, like empathy is kind of in me anyway, and I'm very lucky like that. And I don't want to brag, but I'm pretty good at reading somebody or reading the
sense.
Team. Yeah, reading the team or sitting down with someone. You know, when I sit down with someone, I mean, I don't think I even ask Scott, have you got a license?
Yeah.
Because I want to find out who you are as a human being.
Yeah.
I think if I find qualities in you that I like, then I know that you are going to get better.
Yeah.
In how we do things, I know you're going to be perfect for our culture. And I just want, kind of sounds cheesy, I just want kind people.
Yeah.
And I think sometimes we miss the way of, we don't think kind people can be successful. And I'm thinking, well, I think if you're successful and kind, I think you're stronger than someone who, you know, a bit of a moron and mean, but you're successful. I think the kind person who's successful is stronger.
Absolutely. I just think sometimes with coaching, it's not, they're not bad people, but you know, if their focus is just about themselves or, you know, just about, well, actually, if it's just about themselves, then they're the coaches you want to kind of try and avoid. Like, if it's just, they're just, we've got to get the balance right. You want to develop yourself and improve, and you've got to look after yourself 100%. But if you're just there for your journey, you know, this role is a giving role, isn't it? It's about being there for the players. Whether you're volunteering or you're getting paid for it, it makes a difference. You're there to develop players. And if they're not your main focus, then you probably, you know, you got to say, well, why are you doing it in the first place? You don't get to teach in to get the salary. You get to teach to try and help people learn and get educated and get better, don't you? So I think it's a similar thing.
And that's what I said earlier, Scott, looking at it through the player's eyes, not through yours.
Yeah.
Through you looking at it through the player's eyes and saying, like, what can I do for them? You know, how many times have we sat at a desk and planned our practice session and then tear it up, throw it in the trash can? That won't work for my play, because you're thinking about them.
Yeah.
But if you just plan one and it looks amazing without any thought process of going on the field with your players, and then when you go on and it doesn't work and still being like, you lot are terrible. And it's like, well, there's many times I step back and say, hey, my bad.
Yep.
You know, and I think as well with players, Scott, even if it's not your fault,
sometimes it's still good just to say it.
As the adult, as the coach, as the teacher, you should take some responsibility as well.
Absolutely, yeah. Well, I think it shows lots of players, and you're big enough to say, actually, yeah, that one's on me, and then, you know, and they can recognise that themselves.
Yeah.
That's been absolutely brilliant, Jason. Thank you so much. I just thinking, if coaches aren't doing this, well, I'm sure they are. No, let's have a better question here. How much should coaches be thinking about this proactively? You know, as they're preparing their sessions and their season, whether it's an individual session or season, like, you know, I'm planning my training session for next Thursday. I'm thinking about the topic and the philosophy, sorry, and the game model and my key principles and who's going to be there and, you know, my starter and everything else. How much do I also think about, okay, what's my environment going to like? How am I going to make sure the culture's still in there as well? Should I be proactively thinking about that? Should be part of my session planning? Would you go that far with it? Or is it just a case of, you know, you just got to have it in the back of your mind?
Well, I don't think you can go and do that. Like, you must have one anyway before you go in there, Scott. You can't just go now and be like, if you don't have one and no philosophy, you can't now turn up to a practice and be like, how can my culture be? So you've
no,
got to
Let me ask you better. So you've got one. So we've got one.
I'm sorry, I may have misunderstood that question. I'm sorry.
Yeah, didn't ask you very well. So I guess what I'm saying, we've got a culture, got a philosophy. How much do I have to proactively make sure that I'm embedding that within my weekly sessions with the players? I mean, like, should it be as important as, you know, this the technical and tactical part of my session, that I'm thinking about, okay, how do I make the players feel, you know, whatever my philosophy or culture is, how do I make sure that's coming out in this as well? Because I don't want to lose that bit. Or do I just not hope, but do I just rely on the other stuff going on that is there? Or, you know, things like you said about, you know, clean up the cook at the end of the session and there's things there, but that might not be in a session plan for most coaches because they just do it at the end and they might do it fantastically well, but there's a danger that you may miss some of this stuff off if you don't actually put it in there. And is it almost as important as, you know, the right activity or the conditions in the game you're going to put on?
Yeah, well, like I said earlier, Scott, culture must come first. And culture must come first in your practice or on game day. Because imagine, you know, you're at practice and a kid's late. Part of our culture at FC Portland and at high school is if you're late, you come up to the coaches and you say, sorry, I'm late. That's the first thing you do because we've no problem if you're late, if you come and apologize. But if you sneak into the line or you're late and whatever happens, you're having a game after and you get preferential treatment. Let's say I don't run my players a lot, but let's say before practice a coach said, right, you run 5 laps. You show up late and coach says, hey, high five, how are you doing? And you're the best player. But you don't have to run 5 laps. Yeah. Nothing has been said to you. Those players now are like, are you kidding me?
Yeah.
So now you're
more success of breaking the rules.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you're not, you know, we have it where, you know, if you miss the bus going to the game on high school day, you're not starting. So you have to stay in line with your culture even before your practice starts. Who's on time? You know, who's not coming and who has let you know that they're not coming? We have 4 teams at high school. All 80 players know that they have to mark that they're attending practice or the coach will say, hey, sit out. You didn't mark that you were coming. That's showing a lack of respect. We have got, you know, this is my third year. We have got all 90 players doing that. And they're all laughing, and we make jokes of it. Where I say, "Hey, when you come to my funeral, it's gonna be on Team Snap." I said, "And my wife's gonna be at the church door saying you can't come, you didn't mark." I said, "And I'm gonna put a recorder in my coffin, and it's gonna show. Oh, have you marked Team Snap?" So you know, even though it's serious, it's good to make light heart of it and laugh. But if you're,
I guess, you know, the trick there is being consistent, though, isn't it? Also doing it consistently, yeah. Right? Not picking 1 week, we do it, 1 week, it doesn't matter now. Actually, this week it was serious to the coach because he had a bad day, and next week it's not serious, doesn't mind anymore. Or actually, you know, you're our best player, so the rules don't apply to you as much as they do to the other players. I guess if you're consistent with it, you know, and you stand by it, and then that's how you embed it, right?
Yeah, and listen, kids are not stupid. If they know they can get away with stuff, they will do it and more.
Yeah.
Whereas if they know that you're relentless at it, I mean, I am a pain in the backside on it because I care more about that before my philosophy, because I know if I don't get this right, my philosophy won't work.
Doesn't mean anything. Yeah.
It will not work. And that's why I said earlier, they both go hand in hand.
But absolutely.
Answering your question of, you know, can you let one go before, you know, with the other one at your practice, you've still got to do both. And then your practice session is then based on, you know, is it based on the last game that they played? Is it based on bigger needs of the team? And that could range from a lot of things, couldn't it? It can range from defending, attack. You know, do they look like they're not having fun? Well, do something about it that makes it fun. I mean, we played at Providence Park a couple of weeks ago where the Timbers play. And at the end of our practice session, I made a game of Ludo, and they had four groups, and they're moving the tokens around the board, and when they land on a certain color, it's a crossbar challenge. It's score on a mini goal, and who could get the piece back? And we just had a bit of fun.
Wow, and
that was before a big game that they had, and it's like, this is fun, and some of the players are like, gosh, what is this? And I'm like,
I'm enjoying myself. It doesn't matter.
Yeah, we're having a bit of fun. So, it's up to the coach then, isn't it, to be like, well, you know, what is the priority of the group? You know, do they look like they're having fun? No. Well, do something that shows that can bring that out of them, that, hey, this game is fun. You know, start working together. Have fun together. Or, you know, do they have fun and that's not a problem? Is defending a problem? Well, look at your principles. Tie that principle into your practice session and keep harping on about it to the players. You know, if you're defending and you want the first closest player to press and then you want support behind, run a practice session that's going to force that out of them.
Yeah.
And keep reiterating that to them over the evening. And then when they do it, keep congratulating on them. Everything goes hand in hand, doesn't it?
Of course it does, 100%. But like you said there, out of all this, the most important thing is it's enjoyable and it's fun. It's fun for, you know, the more fun it is for your team and the more fun it is for you, then the more you're going to get out of the sessions. And for all the philosophies and the cultures and everything else you put together, if you're not embedding that in part of it, you're going to miss something out, aren't you, straight away? So keeping it fun is key, along with all the other stuff then that comes around that. But making sure everyone's enjoying themselves, because otherwise it's never going to be quite the same, is it?
No, and in today's
Jason,
society,
thank you so much.
Oh, sorry, mate. Go on.
No, go on.
In today's society, you know, a coach has got to be a bigger cheerleader than they've ever
Absolutely.
Been.
Absolutely. Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
You know, I remember growing up, it used to be, a coach can only offer you 5%. You know, I read in a book, you know, years ago. And you're like, oh, yeah, the coach only offers 5%. And I agreed with it.
Yeah.
But now, kind of flip-flopped. We've got to offer so much, and that's fine, but I always try and bring the percent. You know, so if I'm offering 80%, I know I've got to bring that down. And can we get level at 50-50, or can I go below and get the player back up?
Get them like, a bit more, yeah.
This is about you. Yeah.
And maybe that's the real trick to it, isn't it? It's what you can get the players to do for themselves, and you're just there trying to facilitate that, right, as best you can.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, Jason, you've been a star. I said I'd do an hour at the most, and I've already gone over an hour. I always do this to you. I'm so sorry. I think you go so fast talking to you.
Still could talk about more stuff.
Non-stop. If it's okay with you, it's been great catching up again, you know, but if we can talk again, maybe even if we can, either before the new year or after the new year or something at some point, another topic, if you're up for that, would that work for you? Have you got enough time in the next few months to jump on again?
I've always got time for you, man. I'm not sure if your listeners have got time for me.
They definitely have. They always get your episodes always go down really well, because hey, look, and the truth is, and I love all the guests we get on, but there's certainly a few that just resonate really well with our listeners, because you come from a place of experience, but also with passion, and you're always about putting the players first, you know, and I think that always resonates really well with people, because ultimately, even if I'm not the best coach out there, if my intention is to help the players, then I need to listen to people like you, and that's why the mic's always open to you, because the more we hear from people like you, the better we are doing our jobs out there with the kids we work with, and you know, we're just in it for them. So I'm going to get you back on again, either before or just after the new year. Is that okay? If not sooner. Jason, we probably asked this already twice, but I'm going to ask you again in case it's something different, or you might have a different thing from what you said last time. But just what we ask all our guests on the podcast is, if there was one thing they could change about the world of football, what might that be? You may have said it previously and you're going to reiterate it again, or something different, but just one thing that you'd like to see different, better, changed.
Yeah, I'm going to say something different.
Okay.
I would like the game, and I don't know how this would work, Scott, but I would like the game to just be given back to the kids. I think we've lost a sense of why we do it. You know, I look back, and obviously I don't want to keep harping on about when we did it, because it is different. But I played because I loved it. And I would play on any team that I got put on, whether I got dropped into the reserves, I would play on any team because I loved it. And I didn't have any stress of being like, oh, I want to be pro. Yes, I would like to have played at the highest level I possibly could. And whatever level that ended up, I was fine with it. And I think the game needs to be given back to the kids, and adults need to take a step back. And if you're a parent, see yourself as a taxi driver and a cheerleader. That's what you are. And if you're a coach, you know, see yourself as some inspirational person that's going to and could possibly change this person's life. I mean, there's nothing better than a kid saying, that coach changed my life. You know, because I had that. We had a family that moved into our neighborhood and it just changed the direction where I was going, and it changed my life because of where they grew up. I ended up playing on the neighborhood that they came from that moved to my, and these people changed my life because they all had great values. They understood what team was, and it changed my life. So I think the adults in, you know, in the world of sports, they need to take a good look at themselves, and we need to give the game back to the kids.
That's a great one, Jason. And I think, you know, I think it might have been Chris Frey said it before, but someone else said something similar, you know, a way back on one of the podcasts, and I couldn't agree more. And it's not getting better, it's only getting worse on that basis, unfortunately. But you're right, we're there for them, aren't we? You know, and what a privilege it is in this position, you know, that, you know, even whether you're doing it as a job or you're a volunteer, you're in a position where you can be that inspiration. You've literally got the opportunity to be able to change someone's life. You can get over yourself and your own ego and just, you know, remember what we're here for. We know we want to win our games, of course we do, but if you're shouting at refs on the touchline, if you're shouting at kids or not playing kids, or the, like, you know, you're probably in the wrong space. But there is a lot of that going around. But the more we can say, do you know what, remember why we're here, and actually the win is seeing that kid in 10 years time and them telling you, do you know what, thank you so much for what you did for me, so it meant so much, you know. Don't lose the opportunity just because you want to win a game on a Saturday or a Sunday. It's crazy.
Yeah, and I think, you know, and any organization that is in new sports, that you need, they need to change the mindset of what can we do for you? You know, why are you an organization in new sports? Not to make money. You know, if you're there to make money, then there's no way you're going to have a culture and a philosophy that's going to work. You know, we had nearly 1,000 kids try out for us this year. It's the most we've ever had, but we had to say no to nearly 400 because we can't take everybody. But we could have done, and you know, we could have done, and you know, that's
just saying, cashed in and squeezed people in, and saw the pound sign, the dollar signs, rather than the quality and the products you're trying to create. Yeah.
Yeah, that's $250,000 that we're saying no to.
Yeah.
But that's not why we do it.
It's the right reasons.
Yeah, you know, and I think US soccer need to take that path, because everything seems to be at the moment take, take, take. And it's like, well, it can't be like that if you want to progress.
Yeah. Always thinking what's best for the kids, right? If you can think what's best for the kids and make decisions based on that, you're probably going to be okay.
Yeah.
Jason,
yeah.
Thank you so much. Yeah. What if people want to reach out to you and find out what, you know, what you're up to and where you are, what's the best way for them to contact you?
Yeah. So on the FC Portland website, my email's on there. The FC Portland website is fcportland.org. My email's on there. If anybody wants to reach out who think I can help them, I'm more than willing to help. You know, after your podcast, I've reached out to a lot of people with my LinkedIn rants. I've managed to meet a lot of people and speak. I think it's all about helping each other. So if I can help an organization or a coach, then, and that helps the kids, because these kids are going to have kids, aren't they, Scott? And, you know, I hope that when my
kids... Or become coaches themselves one day.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I hope all my kids, when their kids are playing sports, they've learned from myself and my wife on, how I should be treating my child as in sports. And it all trickles down, doesn't it? So if we can help these kids understand the why, you know, why are they playing, and then they can pass it on to their children, it'll be a better place.
Jason, we'll put your website and your link to that in our show notes. People can find it nice and easy. I'm sure you'll get, you know, again, like last time, you'll get people come reach out to you. All I can say is every time I've reached out to you, you've always, you know, it's an open door. You give up your time so gracefully, and I'm always grateful for that. And, you know, we just need more good people like you banging the drum for the best interest of the kids. So please keep doing it. I know it can be tiring doing the full-time job, doing the family and banging the drum, but please keep doing it, because the more people that do, the more chance we've got of making some changes, big or small. So thank you again for your time. It's been a pleasure catching up.
Oh, no, you're welcome, mate. And every time you come on as well, there's always another book. So there's another book in the making.
Well, is there? Go on, what, tell us about that.
Oh, no, so this one is, it's just my high school experience. And what I've gone through, you know, what I've gone through over the last 2.5 years building that program. You know, this program hadn't won a title since 1990. And we won it last year. And it's been an incredible journey. So I've wrote about, and then the school is Beaverton, and the nickname are the Beavers. So the book is gonna be called Build the Dam. So
like it.
Yeah, so as soon as the
when's it going to be out, Jason? Do you know?
I don't know. I'm just waiting for the season to end, because I've got to obviously write about what we're doing now and some of the problems I've had now and how we handled it. And it's going to go. The season finishes in November, so hopefully I can finish it up by November. And but yeah, it's just talking about.
Is it like a journal of what's happened, or is it like you know, you're talking about
a
diary
journal,
side?
Yeah, a journal, and it's more about culture and you know, and how we've done it, and how I think it should be done. And it's but it's been good, because it's exactly what we've just spoke about. You know, it was about getting the right people in place, and you know, unfortunately at tryouts this year you have to cut people, but they're people that have never been on the varsity team. But over 2 years, they've not showed good character traits that fit in with your culture. And then they're like, oh, I'll change now. This is my opportunity to get on varsity. And I'm like, I'm sorry, it doesn't work like that.
Yeah.
I've been watching.
Yeah.
I've been watching you
there.
I've been watching you over 2 years. And that's not what I want on this team. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
So it's about that. And
it sounds fascinating.
I'll,
yeah.
I'll get you a copy, mate.
That's what everyone should tell me. That's perfect. Well, what we'll do is hopefully when we next time it'll be out, and we can chat about that as well as another topic, so we can cover that in the next podcast.
Yeah, mate. Yeah.
Top man. Thank you, Jason. Lovely to speak to you, mate.
Oh, anytime, bud.
See you soon.
See you, pal.
This episode was brought to you in association with our friends at Soccer Coach Weekly. Established since 2006, Soccer Coach Weekly is a leading source of inspiration and advice for all grassroots coaches. Join thousands of youth soccer coaches just like you, saving time and effort in their goal of having the most effective, enjoyable and successful coaching journey for them and their players. Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed the episode.